I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh joins me for the hour. While crime rates have gone down since last year, violence continues to plague some neighborhoods. On Monday, the mayor and interim police commissioner Gary Tuggle announced coordination with federal law enforcement in an effort to address a possible summertime crime uptick. We'll have the latest on plans for violence reduction. The mayor has also rolled out a new grant program designed to complement her Neighborhood Impact Investment Fund. What's next for places like Park Heights, Pimlico, and Perkins Homes? And the city charter hasn't been updated for 24 years. One proposed change? Quit referring to the mayor as he. Midday with Madam Mayor Catherine Pugh starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Friday and welcome to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today it's Midday with the mayor. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh is my guest for the hour. Yesterday was the first official day of summer. Violence in our city and cities around the country sometimes spikes in the summer months. The mayor recently announced plans to address that possibility, so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the search for a new police commissioner, a new grant program that is targeted to community development efforts that are locally driven, and city immigration policy. We'll also get to as many other topics as we have time for. We'll take your calls, your questions, and your comments a little later in the program. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page if you want to join us there. But later on, you can get on queue for 410-662-8780 for the phones. Email midday at WIPR.org, our Twitter handle at midday WIPR. Madam Mayor, it's good to see you. Welcome back.
Tom, always good to be here. And good to see you.
Let's start first with this.
I was going to ask you about your running.
Well, I had meniscus surgery a couple of years ago, and I'm slower and less frequent than I used to be.
But I did see you. What was the race I saw you in? I know I waved at you.
Yeah.
You might have been standing
on
the sideline.
I was standing on the side
standing
watching.
The
it was the Baltimore Marathon.
Right, exactly.
Well, you're running, what, 5 days a week or something?
Yeah, I'm trying to run at least 5 days a week. I ran 4 straight days this week. I took the day off. I'll run again tomorrow.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Mm-hmm. Good way of checking out the pothole situation, if nothing else, right?
Well, at that time of morning, you better keep your eyes down on the ground, because I run at like 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, so. Much to the joy and the chagrin of your security detail, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But I want to start with this Neighborhood Impact Investment Fund.
Yes.
You had an announcement about a grant program that sort of goes hand in hand with that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the thing that's still on everybody's mind is violence and violence reduction, and I know it's on your mind as well.
Absolutely.
And this kind of thing, you know, people have to understand it's related. I mean,
it's related.
Because we have so many blighted, you know, neighborhoods and stuff. So what's this latest thing? Is it a grant proposal? How's this work?
Well, there are a couple of things. So we have an investment fund that we've created, and thanks to the city council's approval, what we did was we leased garages in the city instead of selling them, because one of the things and conversations that I continue to have with other mayors around the country is the value, the assets of your city. You imagine, you know, we sold off our airport some many moons ago. Can you imagine if we still owned that? And so what I didn't want to do was sell off another asset of the city. But what we do need is investment in neighborhoods and communities that have been underinvested in for decades. And you can name them, I'm sure, and you've been down them. In fact, when you're talking about standing on the sideline at the marathon, you know, the Druid Heights community is one of those communities. You think about Park Heights and parts of East Baltimore, neighborhoods that have just been underinvested. When you look at North Avenue from Hilton to Milton, or you go down Monroe Street, you know, all the way down to Washington Boulevard, you know, the question becomes, or Druid Hill Avenue or Pennsylvania Avenue, the question becomes, what are we doing about these neighborhoods where investment just has not taken place, or where people anticipated investment and didn't take place? Park Heights, again, is another example where I know Schaefer invested some money some time ago right there on Park Heights Avenue. And if you go in some of those houses, you would be overwhelmed at the beauty on the inside of those houses. But we didn't continue that investment. And people still live in those neighborhoods, still live in those communities, and deserve the investment. So what this fund will do is create $55 million. And my goal is to raise $200 million a year for the next 5 years, $1 billion to invest in neighborhoods and communities in our city. And we've gotten a really good response thus far from others who are looking at our city to invest in. I just left the Mayor's College at Harvard University with presidents of companies and corporations across the United States. And the president, Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, said to individuals in the room, there are 50 CEOs from around the world. There were about 35 mayors from around the country. And Blankfein stood up and said, I'm investing in Baltimore, not just because of the leadership. I'm investing in communities and neighborhoods because I'm going to make money. And we want investors to make money off of their investment in our city. He's investing $200 million, and there are others who are looking to invest. And we've
but with the leases, with the leases from the parking garages.
Yes.
So, your predecessor, Mayor Rawlings Blake, wanted to sell them. Mm-hmm. Jack Young, the president of the city council, was very against that, and you came out against that soon after being elected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a grant program that's going to be directed to locally driven revitalization initiatives.
Absolutely.
So Lloyd Blankenfein doesn't qualify as a locally
driven
guy, right?
No,
this
he's
is a different
investing.
Thing.
No. He's investing. Mm-hmm. No, he's not taking from the fund. He's investing $263 million, to be exact, in Baltimore to continue developing a project. No, he's not going
so
to
he's
be taking
not part of this yet.
No.
So who would be part of this? What does locally driven revitalization mean?
Park Heights is, again, another example of what we did. You know, we got $1 billion, for example. We got $1 billion to build new schools in Baltimore.
Right.
We'll build more new schools in this city than the entire state. Right now, that $1 billion looks like 28 new schools. So a perfect example would be where the Pimlico Elementary School is, one of the schools that we're redeveloping. Directly across the street from there are all boarded up houses, were all boarded up houses. What the city did was laid a foundation for those houses, and so it lowered the cost of redeveloping that neighborhood, that particular block. So what happens now is those homes become available, and who we're marketing to? The parents who have children in that school, who are now probably paying somewhere between $800 and $900 a month in rent, now get to own a home that will cost them like $600 a month. So that's the kind of investment that we want to create, luring investors to expand investment in our neighborhoods, and then creating an opportunity for people to buy homes at a lower rate.
So who are the entities then that apply? This is a competitive thing, right?
This is local developers.
So these are local. So if, mm-hmm. if you're talking about
this
Park Heights, do you want developers who are located in Park Heights or
anywhere
in the city?
Anywhere in the city. We also have community development corporations in our own city that we're strengthening. We have the Park Heights Renaissance organization in the Park Heights area. You have the Community Development Corporation in Drude Heights, who will qualify to do some of that expansion in their neighborhoods and their communities. So we're also strengthening those groups and organizations. Look at what's happening across North Avenue, right there at Utah, to Mount Royal. You know, that investment that's taking place there, those kinds of things will qualify.
There's beautiful new school right there.
Beautiful new school right there. And so those schools become ways in which we can expand and create additional opportunities for investment. You know, those schools, that neighborhood still lacks a great grocery store, you know, in that part of the city. And so it also creates an opportunity for that kind of investment as well.
So leasing the parking garages,
mm-hmm.
we lose the income from the parking. How does that work?
No, we'll still yield the taxes from the garages. So we still make money off of the garages as well. And we still share in the revenue of the garages as well.
And the leases are for how long?
They can be up to 40 years. It determines how long we pay back the 55 that we, that we've been able to secure from it.
And your expectation about the impact on the bond rating? Because that was a concern about selling.
It didn't hurt the bond rating at all. So we're really grateful.
So this is called the Community Catalyst Grants Program.
Yes.
And people do apply for it. I understand that Baltimore is also a finalist along with five other cities for a HUD grant, the Choice Neighborhood Grant.
That's exciting.
And so what's our pitch? I mean,
what's the good piece about that is that we were one of 20 cities that applied. I think one of many more than 20, but it whittled down to being one of 20 finalists. And now it's whittled down to one of six finalists that are competing for three grants. That will be at least $35 million or more apiece. And so our pitch is that it's over in an area where we will create probably about 20, 30, 40% affordable housing at least in that community. We will rebuild, we will build new schools over in that area. We will attract a supermarket over in that area. We will create mixed income living in that neighborhood. And so we're very excited. I think our pitch is that it transforms the neighborhood. It will transform that community. It will create opportunities for permanent jobs. It will create opportunities for people in our city to get better housing. I think the other piece is we're looking at this. It also will include a pilot. But as we look at pilots or tax incremental financing, I should say TIF, what we're saying about TIFs in our city is that we will follow the same model that we used for the Port Covington, that we want a large percentage of those who will be working on that project to come from the city. We will have no less than a minimum of 20% affordable housing in that project. This was working with Build, for example.
Right, this is one of the suggestions that Build had for a meeting
absolutely.
You attended with them a few weeks ago.
Exactly, and it's I absolutely agree because that is, in fact, what works for Port Covington. If it works for Port Covington, it can work for our communities and our neighborhoods, and it was something that they worked out well. And I completely agree that that's a great model for the city of Baltimore.
And you think that this Choice Neighborhood program is going to survive? I mean, there's a piece in the New York Times this morning about the Trump administration and the Congress has passed a bill, Senate. It awaits the Senate, and chances of Senate approval on this particular bill not high, but to increase the requirements for SNAP recipients, stuff like that. They're trying to whittle down that program, and there is a big tax cut that was passed by Congress last December. That given the current administration that these monies are going to be available?
So we're absolutely confident in this program. This is actually under last year's budget. This money is already approved. We're finalists for this particular project. We should
What's the time frame? When do you think we'll find out?
Prayerfully, we should know in the next couple of weeks, you know, whether we got it or not. So fingers crossed, prayers up, we can do this.
Speaking of TIFs, there's a proposal to have a TIF for development that will include the demolition of Perkins Homes over in the east side.
Yeah, this is the whole Choice Neighborhood
right,
project.
So that's also, right. So if the Choice Neighborhoods thing doesn't happen, is that the death knell of that development?
We would hope not.
What if it doesn't happen?
Well, let's
not to be a pessimist.
No, because we're very optimistic here. Well, even if it doesn't happen, we'll still look at how do we continue that project. And if there is a TIF to be offered, it would still be in the format that we talked about, that this will include the things that we think are important, the things that Bill thinks is important, and we think that they're important as well.
How about a master plan for Park Heights? I mean, is there
an overarching look? Do you know how long it's been a master plan for Park Heights?
I know.
I mean, there's been a master plan for Park Heights since I was a city council person.
I know.
You know, and so what we've said is, we're focused.
So who's got that plan? I mean, who's like the master planner?
So, working with our planning department and the Renaissance Organization up in Park Heights, the Park Heights Renaissance Organization. If you go up into Park Heights now, you'll see where we've torn down houses in Park Heights. You'll see the change on the corridor. You know, part of the plan is building a new library up in Park Heights. We've built one of the best recreation center facilities there. I don't know if you've seen that lately. We have We have a lit football field, a lit basketball court. We have an outside swimming pool. We have an inside basketball court. We have a dance room there. We have a computer room there. I mean, that's it is a model recreation center for other parts of the city. And so we will continue the development on Park Heights. We're working with LifeBridge. LifeBridge is very much interested in their expansion in the Park Heights area. We're very much working hard on keeping the Preakness in at Pimlico, which will require additional investment as well. And then, you know, we get $5 to $7 million a year in Park Heights as slots impact money. And so how we use that moving forward, we've said in this administration that 85% of the money that comes into Park Heights will be dedicated to the Park Heights corridor so that we can, again, you talk about the investment fund, here's an opportunity to attract additional dollars into that particular part of the city. A lot of work to do in that area.
Before we take a quick break, about Pimlico, we've got Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, you know, just working as hard as he possibly
can. As hard as he possibly
can. He lives right around the corner.
Has been.
For years.
Will continue to be.
But you've got the owners of Pimlico saying they'd rather have the Preakness in law. Laurel. Well, so how does the city, how does the state overcome this?
So we've had a couple of conversations with the owner, and as you well know, his daughter is the one that's really leading that process. So we're looking forward to our continued conversations with them. They want to have additional conversations with us. There is a study that's being done. The first study already talked about the Preakness needs to stay at Pimlico. The governor is for the Preakness staying at Pimlico. And so now this second study is about where will the money come from. And the fact of the matter is that when you talk about slots impact money that are now going to racetracks, that a percentage of the money is supposed to go to the development and expansion of those racetracks. Laurel has been invested in, Baltimore's racetrack has not. And so there is conversation around parity in terms of investment. So we will continue to have that conversation. And working with the Maryland Stadium Authority has just been, I think, great for Baltimore City. You know, they are in charge of, as you well know, building out the 28 new schools in Baltimore City. We've opened up, I think, close to 7. I think we'll open up 7 more before the end of the year. So we're on target to do the right thing for Baltimore City.
Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh is with me here in Studio A. We'll take some of your calls and tweets and emails when we come back after a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, to follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up tomorrow on our program, Monday rather, I will be joined by two candidates challenging incumbent Marilyn Mosby for Baltimore City State's Attorney. Thiru Vignaraja and Ivan Bates join me in Studio A ahead of Tuesday's primary election. We have invited Ms. Mosby, and she has declined to join that conversation. Early voting ended last night. Nearly 73,000 more people voted early this year than in the 2014 primary. So that's a good sign. We hope that there's a big turnout on Election Day Tuesday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. And you can follow us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's try to sneak in a couple of phone calls, Madam Mayor. Let's go to Linda in Pimlico. We're just talking about Pimlico and Park Heights. Linda, welcome to Midday with Mayor Pugh.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, ma'am. What's on your mind?
Okay. I heard her say that she wants to fix back up the neighborhood. I've been living here for over 48 years. The problems that we see up here is because of the people that's involved in the drugs. It would be nice to see the neighborhood come back, but you have to help these people with the way they live. Their lifestyle is totally not acceptable to the ones that want to see the neighborhood come back.
All right. Thanks for the call, Linda. I appreciate it.
That's interesting. I was just in Park Heights. In fact, I walked the Belvedere. We do what we call listening tours, where you go out and listen to people in the neighborhoods and communities, and that is a concern. Drug addiction is a problem throughout the city, but you know, you have to start. You can't just overlook the problems. You have to face them in order to fix them. And I do believe that those neighborhoods deserve as much attention as any other neighborhood in the city. And I think about the work that LifeBridge is doing with methadone treatment and the number of drug treatment programs that we have in Park Heights. But, you know, people deserve good supermarkets. Houses deserve to be redeveloped. And if you go to Park Heights, where the Park Heights Circle is, we finally, that $5 million investment right there, we've started that work already. We're starting in the 3800 block right there at the bottom. Coming up Park Heights, we've torn down several houses along there. So redevelopment is going to take place. And for the very reason that she said, how many years has she said she's lived in?
48, Park Heights?
48 years, and probably owns her home. There are a number of people who still live in Park Heights who do own their homes and deserve that kind of investment. And it is working with all the people and dealing with the challenging problems that are there. And like I said, I just walked that neighborhood with my community action group. also walk the neighborhood with my violence reduction initiative with our police department and our commanders. We've shut down certain stores and areas in that particular neighborhood where drug dealing, we believe, has become a real serious problem. But we're focused.
You talked a little bit about violence reduction just earlier this week, I guess. You and Interim Commissioner Gary Tuggle from Baltimore City Police Department concerned that the summertime is often a time where there's an increase in violence. Park Heights, one of those neighborhoods that is continually plagued by violence. You mentioned partnerships with federal law enforcement, ATF, drug enforcement.
ATF, DEA, the Washington-Baltimore High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Area, the FBI, U.S. Marshals, Maryland State Police, and all of our state partners.
So are these new initiatives? Is this something that hasn't been happening before?
Expanded initiatives. And you will hear later on how expansive that initiative is in terms of agencies that will moving into the city to actually locate in our city to help us focus on these issues. And you're right. When we look at the historical data as it relates to violence, last year, believe it or not, May was one of our most violent months, turned out to be one of our least violent months. But June seems to be ticking in the wrong direction. We're focused because we know that some of the things that we're doing, whether it is the new technology that we put in the police department, I think we talked a little bit about this the last time I was here, that, you know, in Baltimore, in Montgomery
computers
County.
Computers in the cars.
Yeah, in Montgomery County in 1997, they started putting computers in cars, but not in Baltimore City. But we now have those computers in the cars, but still the reporting piece app that needs to be there needs to get there as well. We now have smartphones. We're putting in new technology, more lighting, changing out 76,000 light bulbs in our city to LED lights, but also putting up more cameras around the city so that we can be able to track some of the things that are going on.
When Daryl D'Souza was here, right after you appointed him police commissioner, of course that didn't last too long, but when he was here, he talked about an initiative that had been in the works for a while, which ended up in about 400 warrant arrests.
Yes.
So there was a sweep and involved sheriffs and state police and Baltimore City Police. And we had a week and a half in February where we had 11 days with no murders whatsoever. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, there's an uptick. There seems to be an uptick this month. There was an uptick in April. I mean, is the kind of initiative you're talking about on that scale or in that league of a major sweep? Again, everybody always talks about identifying the few individuals who are causing all the havoc, but boy, they still seem to be able to cause a lot of it.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we've analyzed the data. We know that 89% of the people who come in contact with the criminal justice system has been in contact with the criminal justice system 9 to 11 times. Too many illegal guns on our streets in our city, but too many illegal guns in this country. I think the Washington Post just did a report. It said more illegal guns, more guns on the streets of America than people. And so there are too many illegal guns. So we are squarely focused on who those repeat offenders are. And so with the FBI and some of the federal help, we'll be able to get these folks off of the streets quicker and for longer. But the other issue I think that we have to focus on is how we're creating opportunities for people to work in our city. Even though unemployment has continued to drop in Baltimore City, you still can pass by corners and see groups of people on the corners of our street. So one of the things that, among the things that we've created is the one-day work for one day's pay so that we can get people into some form of working and then be able to observe and help them, you know, to get on to better jobs and opportunities throughout our city.
So the city is funding jobs for the city, how does that work?
We're working with nonprofit groups and organizations in the city to help alleviate this problem because so many people, you know, you talk about the returning citizens. So we've got training programs working with our returning citizens. We're partnering with organizations like the Center for Urban Families to help train folks and get them to working. We're also saying to our employment partners, let us, with some of our opportunity to work programs, let us help you train some of these individuals so we can get folks to work.
When it comes to law enforcement, there have been four commissioners of the police department in the last 3.5 years. This predates your term in office. Mm-hmm. You've had a couple. What's the status of the search for a new police commissioner, and how are you going to structure that?
Well, I think we're moving in the right direction. Let me just say, though, we're trending in the right direction. So the plans that we've put in place are working. And so they're easy to follow in terms of how we're focused on reducing violence. And I think that's what people want most, continue to reduce the violence in our city. And so we have a national firm that we're working with. We'll have applications from all across the country. But I can tell you that there are some hardworking people inside of this police department that understand the strategies that need to take place. But at the same time, we've had some internal problems, as you well know, with our police department. And so we're focused on that as well. When I walked into office, there was one police commissioner there that I thought was valuable, especially when we think about the consent decree, 163-page report that was delivered to us from the Department of Justice, and we had not crafted our consent decree. And Commissioner Davis understood the consent decree, had gone through that in Prince George's County, so knew how to help us put that together. So we worked with our law department. And people said we couldn't get it done. People said it wouldn't get signed, but it did. And so around July, we were done in, signed, the courts approved it, and now it's an implementation stage. But violence continued to go up in our city with no real solutions to the problem. And so he departed in January because we needed to a real focus on reducing violence. The initiative that has been reducing violence is an initiative that Harvard University is studying currently, and that is putting all of our commanders in the same room with my department heads focused on what are those impediments for reducing violence in our city. And we're learning so much sitting
these
in
these are the daily 8 o'clock in the morning
these
meetings.
These are the daily 8 a.m. in the morning meetings. I think Harvard is now making a case study of it for other cities to look at. You know, is this a way to reduce violence across communities in our city? Having all of your commanders, whether it is in the room with your housing department, with your Department of Public Works, with your lighting people, with your employment people.
But as long as Interim Commissioner Tuggle is interim, doesn't that impede, you know, the sort of full steam ahead direction of the police department? How long do you expect a search for a new commissioner? You've said you want to do a national search.
Well, we're doing, and I'm sure he'll be. He'll be in that national search as well.
Yeah, he said he wants to apply, or he is going to apply.
Yeah, I think it could be as much as 60 to 90 days. I'm not sure how long the period is, but what I can tell you is the formula is working. What I can tell you is that he's intensely focused, and so are the other officers and commanders in that police department. Because, you know, while there's an uptick in certain areas, there's a downtick in almost every. I mean, there's a downtick all the way across. We're reducing violence. There's a high decrease among burglaries and assaults in our area. You know, the area that concerns me the most is the homicides and the non-fatal shootings. We're down in non-fatal shootings. We're down in homicides. But when you look at that total violence, to me, one death or one gunshot in this city is one too many.
Tavon has a Facebook comment. He's in the Edmondson Village area. He says, we've had a lot of murders in our neighborhood over the last couple of months. I see we have the Mobile Police Command Center set up at Edmondson and Allendale. Things have been good, but when they leave, the violence starts back up like it did Saturday night on Edmondson at Normandy. Will the Mobile Command Center now remain in our area 24/7 to keep us residents safe?
So I know that the Edmondson Avenue area is part of our violence reduction initiative, so we move it around. It's still in that area, in and out of that area. We don't have that many mobile units, and so there are other areas, too, that we have to pay particular attention to. But that is, when we talk about the violence reduction initiative, what we've done is carved out areas in the city where violence is at its highest, and that is one of the areas that we're squarely focused on.
Destiny in Curtis Bay. Destiny, welcome to Midday with Mayor Pugh.
Hi, thank you. My name is Destiny Watford. I live in the Curtis Bay community in South Baltimore, where we have over 517 vacant homes. And communities across the city have come together to address this very real issue of vacancy in our communities and formed together to create the Fund the Trust Act. And the question I had for the mayor is, what is her position on the Fund the Trust Act?
Okay, Fund the Trust Act has to do with affordable housing.
Yeah,
so, all right, thanks for that call, Destiny.
So we've already, in fact, we passed a bond bill to put $10 million into the Affordable Trust Fund. And we're, again, 20% of all the housing in the city is affordable plus. We're increasing that. And then, as you well
this
know,
has been a complaint by a lot of people for a long time that there is this thing, there's this affordable housing fund, but that it's been unfunded. So
has that
turned around now?
Yeah, we are funding it, and probably for the first time, the city is actually funding it. And the other thing is, what folks should know is, when we talk about this development that we're doing, especially in Park Heights and other neighborhoods and communities, and when we're talking about incentivizing people, it is all about affordable housing. And so we know that every project in the city not only has to have a percentage of affordable housing, we're also dealing with homelessness in our city. And so we're looking at creating homes for the homeless as well. And so there's been a great deal of focus on that. We just spent $1.5 million on creating homes for the homeless in Baltimore City, and we'll continue
to
do
that. How many people will that be able to have?
I think we've done over 100-some-odd people as it relates to that.
Salvation Army just closed their homeless shelter on Calvert Street. Is that going to be a big hit to the effort?
Not a big hit. We're working with them, but as you well know, we are working with other organizations, whether it's Helping Up Mission or others, and we're also focused on building homes for the homeless. It's not just shelters, because what happens with shelters oftentimes is, you know, you come in, you got to go out, then you got to come back in, you got to fight for your bed. And I always tell people, look at homelessness, and I was just at a conference on yesterday looking at this whole issue. You know, think about homelessness as you would think about yourself. You know, what is it that you would want? You would want to be able to walk into a place, you know, lay your head down, take a bath, take a shower, get up the next morning, begin to figure out how do you get through the next day, and be able to access the services that you need in order to get a job, get treatment. And all of those things are important to homeless people, because you don't know what their lot in life is or what caused that. But we've got to be able to assist folks so they can move beyond the condition that they find themselves. And I think that that is really important, that we surround and wrap the services around those individuals so that they can get the help and get the assistance that they need.
When it comes to violence reduction, there is this, I mean, we've got ROCA, this program that was started in Boston, that which starts here in Baltimore on July 1st. Safe Streets, the program of, interventions with people who've themselves been incarcerated, is going to be expanded. There are four centers. We're going to add six more sites eventually. But there is this feeling, this vibe, when I talk to people about the city, they're so concerned about the violence. And on top of that, we have this debacle of the police commissioner not evidently paying his taxes for 3 years. And then it calls into question how well he was vetted. Now, I got to tell you, between you and me, I wouldn't have thought to ask anybody, have you paid your taxes every year?
Well, let me just say this to you.
But, I mean, gee whiz.
I've asked bank presidents, companies, corporations. You don't get asked that question. Certainly we'll make sure that it gets asked the next go around, but I can tell you that that's a personal matter. Would not have been a question that would have been raised, but they were vetted.
But the sense of the disarray with the department, are you confident that the current interim situation is going to be able to sustain the kind of effort that clearly is going to be needed moving forward?
So let me just say, the violence reduction, as I spoke about, started in November of 2017, based on the initiative that we put together. This was a concept that I came up with. I started a call to action group back in January of 2017 that meets in City Hall twice a month, whether it is ceasefire that, you know, calls for ceasefire throughout our city, whether it is the number of groups and organizations that are engaged. I can tell you that those feet on the ground and the violence reduction initiative, we saw violence dropping in November when we started. We kicked it off November the 1st. Violence dropped by 18%. In December, down by 12%. January, down another 10%. February, down another 10%. And March, down.
The numbers definitely trend down, but people don't have the sense that it's getting better.
But I think when you have these kinds of conversations, you know, that's what it's about. People don't have all the information. People need to hear what's happening in our city. People need to know that you're focused. They need to know that there are results of your focus. And I'm telling you, it's not me. The numbers bear it out. The numbers will tell you that we're trending downwards. The numbers will tell you that we're moving in the right direction. The numbers tell you that the plan is the right plan. The numbers tell you that the people who are focused on this every day are completely focused on it. Whether they're debacles or steps or that are made that are not the best steps, or people make mistakes and you're not responsible for them. But at the same time, you've got to focus, and you've got a team that understands that they've got to work together, that they've got to collaborate, and change takes place when everybody's focused.
We'll have more with Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh after a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I will share with the mayor some of your Facebook and emails and tweets when we come back. By the way, the mayor is hosting an event Monday evening with WIPR's own Aaron Henkin. Aaron, along with Patrick, yeah, it's going to be fun, produces Out of the Blocks here on WIPR. Aaron will be in conversation with the mayor at a free event Monday night, 6 o'clock, at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company on Calvert Street here in Baltimore. We've got a link to information on our website, wipr.org/midday. And while we are on the subject of Out of the Blocks, congratulations to Aaron and Wendell, who have won an Edward R. Murrow Award for Best News Documentary. This is a big national award, and we are thrilled that these two great friends and colleagues have been recognized in this terrific way. Congratulations, gentlemen, and all the best to you in the future. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, Baltimore has a newly renovated park. Ambrose Kennedy Park in Johnston Square is going to reopen tomorrow morning after a $1.3 million renovation. Johnston Square is in East Baltimore at East Eager Street and Harford Avenue. There's a ceremony marking the reopening of the park tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Plus, the 38th Latino Fest is this weekend in Patterson Park. And also, the Northeast Baltimore comic book retailer Amazing Spiral is holding the city's first ever Diversity Con. It's an exploration of multiculturalism and diversity in comics and pop culture. It's going to feature panel discussions and workshops and all that stuff. We'll have more information about all these events on the Midday webpage. If you're just tuning in today, it's Midday with the Mayor. Catherine Pugh is the 50th mayor of Baltimore City. If you have a question or comment for the mayor, our phone number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR, and you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page as well. We have an email from Dan, who says, every time Madam Mayor speaks, I hear a pastiche of ideas and concerns and projects and buzzwords. I don't hear deliverables. What do you think?
I think the $55 million is a deliverable. I think the 76,000 light bulbs that are changing in the city is a deliverable. I think the reduction in violence is a deliverable. I think the reopening of Shake and Bake certainly is a deliverable. So I love the buzzwords. Keep on doing the work.
Dan says, simply between now and April 2020, what are the three things that Mayor Pugh most wants to accomplish?
I think what we're doing, reducing violence in our city. We're building 28 brand new schools in our city. I think 7 to 10 are already done, so we'll continue that. I'm sure we'll be pretty much there by 2020. I think you'll see the redevelopment using the investment fund of $55 million. You'll see the changing in Park Heights and other neighborhoods throughout our city.
Let's talk about ROCA.
ROCA is a program that's
ROCA is the Spanish word for rock, and it's a program that they've done as a violence intervention program in Boston. It's now going to be started here, evidently.
Yes, and it's focused on 17 to 24-year-old offenders who we can't seem to get a handle on. And Boston implemented this program, and it's working for them. They've experienced some of the lowest reduction in violence by wrapping their hands around these young people. When I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which happened to be in Boston, had a conversation with the ROCA folks and the police department. They really like the way that it's working. We've hired local people here in Baltimore, so we're very excited.
You're going to have to raise a whole bunch of money for it.
It's not
a cheap program.
No,
so where are we financially with that?
We got a lot of help from the private sector, thanks to a number of our folks, whether it's Johns Hopkins, a number of BG&E and some others who just pitched in right away.
How about the state? Is Governor Hogan committed to it?
They've given us some money that we'll be able to invest in ROCA as well, but the $10 million that we needed initially to kick it off came from the private sector here in Baltimore.
How much more do we need?
I think we're there. We're there.
So we're done with the fundraising for that.
Yeah.
And Safe Streets. It's another program that's been around for a little while. It's had some bumps in the road, but generally people point to the data that says that this is a really effective
working
program.
They want it. We had three in the community. We're expanding it to 10. So where the RFP is out now, people are vying for the program. So we look forward to that getting up and running.
What's the time frame for that?
We want those to be running this summer. The seven additional programs, we should have those
by next summer.
No. They'll be
this summer.
The RFP went out. We're already reviewing those applications.
We have a tweet from Thais Poetry who says, please ask the mayor if the African American Heritage Festival is coming back to downtown.
It's 2 days at Druid Hill Park, and we've got some special guests. And I think those will be announced in the next week. I think people are going to be surprised.
So Druid Hill Park, not downtown at the stadium like it was a few years ago, but up in Druid Hill Park, Reservoir Hill. This is an email from Kim who says commercial corridors are vital to neighborhood redevelopment. The Baltimore Main Street program is underfunded. Will the neighborhood development funds contribute to Main Streets and commercial revitalization?
Not only that, the slots impact money is also helping some of the Main Street corridors as well. So we're very excited about the work that's being done and will be done in those particular areas. And she is absolutely right. It has been underfunded, but we're looking at the continued expansion of our Safe Streets program.
Stan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Mayor Pugh.
Welcome. Madam Mayor, one of the great disincentives for middle-class people moving into the city is, of course, the high real estate taxes. And I know there's an idea that's been kicking around, but basically that you make an announcement that the taxes will be lowered on January 1st, say 2020, and to that level of the surrounding counties. And that would be a great incentive for people to move in. Of course, you have to bond the loss in revenue for a few years. But I think you have terrific housing stock, and people who want to move into the city get that urban flavor.
But Stan, let me ask you on behalf of our listeners, what does bonding the lower revenue mean?
Well, let's say that you lower the real estate taxes starting in 2020. You have to make up that difference because you're going to be losing money on the real estate taxes for 3 to 5 years. So you have to bond that difference, bond to account for that loss in revenue.
Okay, Mayor.
So thank you for the question. A couple things. One, we are reducing property tax. We've been reducing it now every year for the last 5 years. We will continue through 2020. We've already put together, and I'd invite Stan, he could actually join that commission if he leaves his phone number, that we have a real estate commission, a tax commission that we've put together to study the areas around how we reduce property taxes in the city, because it is an issue as it relates to the increased ownership of properties in our city. Millennials love Baltimore. The two fastest growing populations in the city, 18 to 34, 55 years of age and older. As you well know, you can't build an apartment building downtown before it's already filled up, or in Hamden and Remington and other areas of our city that are populating very quickly. But what we want to do is make sure that we are attracting all incomes to the city. Around the harbor, I tell folks I don't know how they can get any more houses in Canton, Federal Hill, because we're booming crazy in those areas. But we also want to preserve some of those areas in our city, whether it's Roland Park or Ashburton, Hanlon Park, where we have single-family homes and people stabilizing neighborhoods and communities. So the Tax Commission is looking at that. Looking at how do we continue to reduce real estate taxes in our city, because as he pointed out, even if you do, you've got to figure out how do you make up that income. But the issue is how do we grow the population, and I think that's what he's addressing, and we do need to continue to grow the population in Baltimore City.
And, of course, you don't need me to tell you that the neighborhoods that you mention, all of which is, what you say is exactly true when it comes to housing. I mean, they're booming. Remington, Hamden, mm-hmm. Harbor East, Federal Hill, Canton, downtown. These are the white neighborhoods, right?
No, what
are
we, not necessarily.
What
not
are we going to do?
I see them more integrated than perhaps maybe you do, but I live in Ashburton.
Right. And that one is the one that
we're
is predominantly,
single family neighborhood.
And that's an historically, affluent black neighborhood. And,
yeah.
Which is great. We need more of those. How do we get more Ashburton?
Mount Washington, same thing, very integrated neighborhoods and communities. And so what I'm saying is that we need to continue to grow those neighborhoods. Nobody in Ashburton is trying to move out, which, you know, we're in our neighborhoods. We don't plan to go anywhere. And those values of those properties aren't where they should be either. Hanlon Park is the same way. So we do have affluent African-American neighborhoods in our city, and we do have more integrated neighborhoods in our city as well.
Let's go to Jill in Mayfield. Jill, welcome to the Midday with the Mayor show.
Hi. You had a wonderful task force on safe spaces for work and live spaces for artists. I read the report. It was excellent. I'm wondering what's going to happen next and if there's any connection between that and the schools that are going offline that may be able to be renovated, and because we know that cultural centers in neighborhoods really give them a boost,
okay,
like Jubilee Arts, for example.
Yeah, thanks for that call, Jill.
Absolutely. There are a couple of places that we're looking at for development. For art space, expanding more art space in our city, and she's absolutely right. Artists attract investment. Artists also help stabilize neighborhoods and communities. So I know over in West Baltimore, we're looking at a particular piece of property that we're creating art space for. And so it is about expanding opportunities in housing. Also, the big building on Howard Street, I don't know the name of it. We're looking at how do we expand that area too for more artists. Again, very supportive of the art community, very supportive of art housing. And so I will again check in with my art task force to see how well we are doing with creating those spaces.
Julia asks, what's up with the barriers on Druid Park Lake Drive?
Oh, so the barriers on Druid Park Lake Drive are the bike, she's talking about the bike lanes that are being built.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
it's going to be a bike lane?
Yeah, connecting Druid Hill and that community and Reservoir Hill with Hamden and that community, trying to create safe space for people.
So Druid Park Lake Drive is going to be a one-lane street then?
No. We've slowed down because we've got to build the bike lanes, but no.
It's a temporary thing.
And just for those who are looking at Druid Hill Park, the amphitheater is being built there. And for those who are in neighborhoods where you have reservoirs, according to U.S. Department of Environment, we've got to put the water in those tanks. And so you'll see a lot of work going on.
Yeah, there's
in those
a lot of work going on in, the,
a lot
in that
of work
reservoir.
Going on.
We just have 30 seconds. The build meeting that we referenced mm-hmm. Earlier in the show, one of their initiatives was to have churches issue IDs to
Love
undocumented
mm-hmm.
people. So you support this idea. How does that go from idea to reality? And is it necessary, given the 2014 state law that says undocumented folks can get a driver's license in Maryland?
Well, here's how they explain it, and I do understand it. There are people who still live in fear in our communities and there are folks who are going through the process of becoming citizens as well who still live in fear. But they will go to their churches, and so they feel safe in their churches. They still feel safe communicating who they are there, and so we support that effort. We support that effort. But Tom, I got something for you. I love at some point to turn the mic around the other way and have a conversation with you. So I'm going to put that on
it
my
would
agenda
be,
as
it would
well.
Be my pleasure. I'd enjoy
it.
Because
I got some questions I'd like to ask
okay,
as well.
Okay. That's
also,
all the time we have, so I'm out of all the questions I can ask now. But
LMA. LMA is coming to AFRAM.
LMA. Very
African American Heritage.
I don't know
Festival.
Who LMA is, but
she's,
I bet it's a big deal.
She's running up the charts.
Very good. Well, okay. Mayor, it's nice to see you. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Mayor Catherine Pugh, coming up Monday here on Midday. I'm going to be joined in Studio A by Ivan Bates and Thiru Vigna-Raja. They're running in the Democratic primary for Baltimore City State's Attorney against the incumbent, Marilyn Mosby. Ms. Mosby has declined our invitation to join us, but I will have a conversation about the major issues facing the criminal justice system with her two challengers. And by the way, we will have complete coverage of primary night on Tuesday night beginning at 9 o'clock. I'll be live here in Studio A with a bunch of great expert analysts and all of our reporters out in the field. That's it for us today. Thanks to Bottoms Up Bagels for lunch. They are a small batch pop-up bagel shop. They prepare hand-rolled New Jersey style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by traditions of bagel making dating back to the 1940s. They are available at the Waverly and the JFX Farmers Markets and online at bottomsupbagels.com. Our director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, Kathleen Cahill produced the program. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the midday theme music. We get production assistance from Kendall Cunningham and Karina Valoyanis. Stay tuned for a reveal. It's coming up right after the news. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.